When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. It is John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I am here.
Yes, you are.
It's been a while. It feels like a long time since we've spoken. It's only been a few days, though.
It has been exactly 3 days.
Huge. Huge amount. Yes. How are you? How was your weekend?
Weekend was okay. You know, watch a bit of F1. This was a race weekend. What else did I do?
Did you watch it live? Did you watch it late? When did you watch the race?
I watched a bit late. I mean, my sleep schedule, it's really hard for me to time my sleeping pattern for it. So, like, I always intend to at least, like, sleep ahead of time. But then I end up staying up, and I try to stay up for it. And I don't fall asleep until mid-race. So, you know, that I caught most of the race, but it was a bit of a struggle staying up. How about you?
I watched it in pieces on Sunday. I watched it live for the first portion, and then all of a sudden my son grabbed the remote and we were watching Mighty Pups. So that was it was not a, hey, can I watch this? It was just, this is what we're doing. It's like, all right. So that was it. And then later in the day, I sat down and watched the rest of it. So I knew for the second half, I knew about the whole Carlos Sainz engine catastrophe, but did not know what exactly the cause of this was. Man, it was pretty deep into the race. I think it was like lap 55 of what, 71?
Yeah, his car basically
it was a little scary. It was
caught on fire.
They had the cameras on it, and these announcers, like, it's just, their blood is ice cold. Like, they're just calling this as though, you know, it's like, okay, there's some flames, and then they shoot it until there's like some concern, and then they cut away. They're like, okay, this is getting pretty intense right now. And then they went back. But the problem was, like, the car was going in reverse as he's trying to get out of this car, that the flames are starting to engulf this, this car. And anyway, thankfully he was out, but looked very perplexed, because, you know, it was a potential 1-2 finish for Ferrari, and that late, 16 laps to go, it was unfortunate.
Yeah, really. No, ended up being
It gave the F1 ESPN Twitter account the ability to write the headline. They had Carlos Sainz sitting there despondent. It's Spain without the S.
Oh, goodness. Wow. That was a headline. Interesting.
I'm sure they were up all night, really patting themselves on the back for that one. Yes. Anyway, that was it.
For my weekend?
I just, in general, the race. Any other dramatic conclusions? I mean, dude, Mick Schumacher, he's coming on.
I know. It seems like it's Haas's season right now, especially Mick. So I don't know. I never know if we should keep the F1 talk at the beginning or save it till the end.
Oh, this is the end. This is all we're doing tonight.
We just kind of broke into it after talking about my weekend. But how was your weekend, John?
It was all right. It was, I'm trying to piece together the weekend. No, it was good. It was good. Very nice out. We got, it was a birthday weekend for Max. So we did a bunch of different things, got him this like inflatable water slide that was pretty much takes up our entire backyard. It's pretty sizable. It's
amazing. I saw a photo of this. This was incredible.
Yeah, these things are tremendous. You can inflate it in like seconds, and then it deflates rather easy. It's
so you rented it. You have to buy.
Bought it.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Oh, so you can bust that thing out whenever.
I can bring it over. Way.
You're going to be the most popular, you know, house in the block, I'm sure.
Maybe, yeah. I'm going to charge admission if any other kids want to use it.
Of course, you got to make that money back.
That's it. This is an investment. This isn't a birthday gift.
That's it. I like it.
So yes, no. I had a very good weekend. It was one that was kind of enjoyable, that we didn't have any shows to have to, like, any big shows going on. So it was kind of the calm before the storm that begins this weekend and extends for the next month. So that is all coming up, folks. This week is the beginning of the G1, which means, number one, have you got your picks in for the post-wrestling G1 contest? The deadline is Friday night at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go to postwrestling.com/G1 and you can play against the entire listenership of Post Wrestling. It is free to join, making your picks in all of the different matches, block winners. It is it's an arduous process. But of course, Wei, it will also be the crowning of the E-Block winner.
And oh, yeah.
Here to declare his candidacy, John Pollock. Picks submitted, and I have joined the E-Block coming for that title.
This is a first time ever, isn't it? So not only can you play against all the other people who have entered, and again, it's free to enter, you can also play against me. You can play against John Pollock. So you get a bragging rights, potentially, to say, I beat John Pollock at a professional wrestling pool.
Oh, you're assuming they're going to beat me.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. That is part of the competition.
I don't know how well these are going to work out. You got to really, I would be curious the work that some people put into this. I put in about 10 minutes worth. So,
Well, we know every year, like if you just randomly guess things, I think you'd have a pretty decent chance of at least doing pretty well. So,
well, there was definitely some random guessings in all of this.
Well, I will say if you are a little bit clueless and you want to maybe get a bit of guidance, you know, about who might be in the running for to do well in the G1 this year. I know two people who might be putting together a little bit of a primer tomorrow on the Post Daily News update.
That is right. Myself and Karen Peterson will be doing a entire preview of the G1 Climax Tuesday, 1 Eastern, youtube.com/postwrestling. We are going to go through all of the participants, all the blocks, how this whole tournament works for the people that are jumping on board now. This is the drive to survive of Japanese wrestling tournaments, and you just are going to be hopping aboard. So look forward to that live Tuesday at 1 Eastern with Karen Peterson joining me. Also, in regards to our G1 podcast, they will begin this Saturday. It is going to be Wei Ting and Karen Peterson on Saturday, and then Wei with WH Park on Sunday. So all members at postwrestlingcafe.com will be getting all of our G1 podcasts that will encompass all of the events. They will all be covered in various podcasts from now until August the 18th. So you can jump on board and you'll be getting two shows alone this coming weekend.
Yeah, that in addition to our MCU later reviews, which we have our season finale for Ms. Marvel live this Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern, Rewind a SmackDown that takes place live Fridays at 11 p.m. Eastern, and then, of course, Rewind Away every other week, including, I mean, if you're disappointed, we cut off the F1 talk this afternoon. There will be plenty of F1 talk this week because we will be talking about Drive to Survive Season 1, Episodes 1 to 3 tomorrow in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
That's right. So look out for that Rewind Away on Tuesday evening, covering Season 1, Episodes 1 through 3 of Drive to Survive. Have you sat down and watched any of these episodes yet?
No.
Very, very easy watches, I will say. I think you will enjoy sitting back and watching these three. And yes, we will talk all about it on Tuesday. One other thing is that I did write up a piece today for cafe members up 1,900 words. On the Montreal Screwjob. I don't know why I did this myself, but I sat down, I watched WWE Rivals, and at the end of it, I was like, you know what? I think I should write something.
I haven't thought about enough.
That's what I felt the world needed today was another 1,900 words about the Montreal Screwjob. But I was less than impressed with its coverage on Rivals on Sunday night.
I saw, and I think very necessary, you know, anytime it becomes a topic of conversation in the public eye to maybe have a bit more of an informed take from somebody such as yours. So I thank you for that, John. Last thing here before we get to our review, Martin Bushby and Benno, those two are going to have a hell of a weekend because they are attempting a 24-hour charity stream. And they will be talking to various people, including myself, including various members of the Post Wrestling community. So I will probably put a link up. I mean, you can follow Post Wrestling at Post Wrestling, and you'll probably find a link to it. But you will find out about it. Follow at Bushby01 for all that information.
Yes, this is going to be the most ambitious undertaking two individuals in the podcast space have ever undergone. This is going to be unbelievable.
It's kind of, you know, Martin's unofficial going away, I would say, from the podcasting world.
Yeah, it might be by necessity after these 24 hours. I don't know if he'll have anything left.
He will have recorded enough hours to really last, you know, 2 years, I would say.
Remember when on Saved by the Bell, they tried to save the Max by doing one of those like 24-hour telethons?
I don't remember, but okay.
Okay.
What was the end result of that? Did they save the Max?
Well, I'm just hoping that by, you know, hour 22, hour 23 of Saturday's live stream, that maybe Mario Lopez shows up and gives the big pep rally at the end to get everyone energized and light up those phones. Because the big bopper, I'm sure, is going to be Benno on this.
Well, is Benno going to be addicted to caffeine pills and then start singing I'm So Excited? I'm so scared.
Yes. Yeah, that's going to be those two in tandem. But the good thing about those caffeine addictions, it's a solvable addiction in 22 minutes, as they learned. That's what Peter Engel taught us all as young children. All right, we'll check all of that out. That information will be on the site, and we will remind you throughout the week on our various shows. The best of luck to Benno and Martin, and I mean that sincerely. Mm-hmm. All right, so on that note, we get into Raw from Monday night at the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas. You think AT&T have ever had a 16-plus hour outage causing those in San Antonio to have no ability to call for urgency, have any connection to the outside world? I wonder if that's ever happened.
I do wonder. I mean, I'm sure it's somewhat possible. I would hope not, because I think as bad as it was for Canada, like if that happened in the U.S., I think it would be that much more catastrophic globally.
It could be disastrous, yes. A lot of lessons learned. So we start off with highlights of Roman Reigns appearing on SmackDown, and Brock Lesnar is out to start the show, stating, God bless Texas.
This was like a bit of a strange opening. You know, it's not unusual for Raw to cold open with a recap from something from a prior episode, including SmackDown or Raw. But this recap was like nothing more than Roman being in the ring and saying two lines, one of which was, when the tribal chief is on top, life is good. And like, I'm watching this trying to think like, well, what was the purpose of this? What are they setting up here? And it really was for no other reason than for Brock Lesnar to say, well, it looks like Roman Reigns is having a really good life. And that's it.
Tied it beautifully.
That's it. Like they decided to do all of that just to lean into
This is the true genius of the brand split. They can have conversations across brands.
Yeah, but nothing was said. No. This was not really a conversation. It was like, you know, he said a couple words and I'm going to start my promo off with the same few words.
Well, this promo by Brock Lesnar was brought to you by the word hog.
Yes.
Because Roman is living high on the hog. And there's a saying that Brock thinks came from around here. Pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. And this crowd certainly reacted like we did not author that slogan, but go for it, Brock. He calls Roman a hog, and Brock slaughters hogs on his farm every day. Every day he's killing animals.
He's a farmer.
What a model citizen. And at SummerSlam,
you eat meat. You and I both eat meat. Somebody has to, unfortunately, do that.
Is he eating hogs on a daily basis? Are people being fed? This sounds more like recreation.
You're saying he's killing hogs just for fun?
If he's doing it daily, I don't think he's going on a steady diet of hogs.
Well, he's not. He's probably doing it for. I mean, if he does own a farm,
is he freezing them, and he's just has a big. Yeah, you know,
he probably sells. He's probably part of the food chain of meat.
Yes.
So maybe he's just selling them to a local market.
If there's a performer that needs a side hustle gig, it's Brock Lesnar to make a little extra scratch on the side.
Well, clearly he loves it. I mean, the man grew up on a farm, works with his hand, you know? Yeah. So
yeah. Maybe that's how he's killing the hogs, with his hands.
God, I hope not. That sounds awful.
He says that at SummerSlam, the tribal hog is going to get a country shit kicking like he's never seen. So this main event has escalated to the level of we're using shit to sell this. Yeah.
No, explicit.
Country shit kicking.
Mm-hmm. Saskatchewan, a Saskatchewanian country shit kicking. Yeah. You know, I don't think about Saskatchewan when I think about the country, but yeah, sure.
Paul Heyman walks out and Lesnar says, speaking of hogs, And Heyman calls this the most barbaric SummerSlam. And it plays to Lesnar's favor, having a last man standing match. The Usos are shown watching this in the back. And Heyman explains that Lesnar's legacy of annihilating people and leaving them for dead, that's his legacy. He puts people down for good. Lesnar doesn't care if he sends Roman Reigns to the hospital or the morgue, like he's a head kick by Mirko Krokop, and says that a hog slaughterer, an annihilator, will be out for revenge against my tribal chief. And Heyman says how Reigns is approaching 700 days as champion, and this is one streak that Lesnar will not conquer. I did like this line because it is the idea that there is something here at stake for Roman Reigns, not just the championship, but this triple digit streak that he is trying to reach. And he will do anything to prevent Reigns from losing. Even if he has to train Roman to put his hand up Brock's ass and rip his heart out. Is there enough time between now and July 30th to teach this rare technique that seems out of Mortal Kombat and the ultimate Game Genie code for the ending?
Yeah, I don't know if
put your hand up his ass and rip the heart out.
I mean, I'd love to see Heyman teach it. How would he even showcase this? Maybe with a hog. Well, listen, it's a bit of a visual language here, you know. If you're a fan of Paul Heyman, maybe you'd be into it. He did the usual thing where he was really putting over the attributes of the opponent. It almost felt like it was a pro Brock Lesnar type of setting, or sorry, type of promo. But of course, he kind of ends it with, "Wow, you're so great, you're so scary, you're so devastating." But my guy is going to, I'm going to have to teach my guy to be his best to beat you. That sort of thing.
You know? It was Paul Heyman playing Brock Lesnar's manager, but they inserted the caveats to keep it as though he is representing Roman Reigns. I will say this.
You represented both guys.
Between Friday and Monday, I do feel like Heyman is carrying the load of setting up this match for the end of the month. Theory comes out, and he explains how, once again, he's going to cash in at SummerSlam, and they roll footage of Theory being F5'd off the top of the pod at Elimination Chamber by Brock. And it was so gruesome that they cut to black before Theory made impact on the floor coming off of this pod. And Theory has not forgotten about this from all the way back in February. And with that, Alpha Academy appear ringside. Lesnar refers to them as cockroaches and challenges the two. Otis enters, but Gable comes from behind with a chop block. But Brock does not leave his feet. He reattaches his ACL and makes his comeback, destroying both. He attacks him with steps, chairs, belly to belly to Gable. I was freaked out that he was going to try this onto Otis, but thankfully he just F5'd Otis onto the desk. And that ended the segment with Brock slaughtering these hogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it was a promo that I think was, you know, at least interesting, very visual, and probably something you wouldn't have been a fan of if you're a vegetarian. But the live crowd in Texas seemed to really be into it. I have to say, you know, we're getting to the point now.
He chose his location for this type of promo.
Right. I have to say, like, I think we're getting to the point in this feud where I'm just getting so much, like, deja vu from it that it does not seem at all fresh or that interesting. You know, it's not like they've really come up with, like, too many different angles about what's really at stake this time around that's different from what was at stake at WrestleMania. So it just kind of feels like, you know, these are segments we've seen over and over again for years now.
Yeah, I think the lack of a breathing room between WrestleMania being so definitive and that WrestleMania was not so long ago, and now we're just hitting replay. It's tough what they have going against them. This was obviously not the planned direction, but one where it's now just trying to make this feel as big as possible, but you're coming off like that exact promotion for WrestleMania. This is the biggest match in WrestleMania history. And it was a very, you know, average match with a conclusive finish to it.
Right, right. They are, but you know, I would at least hope that they would be going through a bit of a different playbook this time around, with, you know, some different wrinkle in the story that they're telling.
Theory. To make this, that's the wrinkle that they have in this, and I don't know how much
really
that's
a shitty wrinkle.
Well, that's they're pushing that as hard as anything for the show, is the idea that the winner will be.
How is that supposed to make me more interested in the result of this match? You're basically telling me the result of this particular matchup does not matter whatsoever, because the real match is set to take place afterwards.
Yeah, they're promising you the title change, or at least heavily dangling that in front of you.
So why should I give a shit about Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns?
Can they have a leg to stand on at the end?
It's not like Theory has, like, you know, an advantage with one guy over another.
No, he said it does not matter who wins. That's literally part of his talking points every week. It doesn't matter if it's you or Roman Reigns. The winner is going to be destroyed.
Right. So, you know, I understand why they went with Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns to a mainstream viewing audience. It is probably the biggest match that they can make with the pieces that they have given. But, man, like, there's at least this week, I don't think that much unique interest if you're somebody who watched prior, you know, for WrestleMania and whatnot.
Next was Rey Mysterio, who is with Dominic, taking on Finn Balor and with Damian Priest in his corner. And they do a promo segment in the ring where they note that in 2 weeks' time at Madison Square Garden for Raw, it's going to be promoted as Rey Mysterio's 20th anniversary in WWE. And they did stipulate in WWE. We're not imagining this was his fictitious debut. Just a descended from the skies.
20th anniversary in the big leagues. Okay. That's how they should be promoted.
Minus a hiatus here or there. And, you know, the Lucha Underground years and AAA and all that, but 20 years, give or take. Let's round up. He's been here. And Priest says that Ray is done. He's washed, and you have nothing to offer Dominic. You're just an old mask with tired tricks. They have more to offer for Dominic, because we will decide the future of this industry. And Balor says Edge is also a legend, and look what happened to him, as they replay the attack. Balor says Edge is never coming back. So you know what that means. And he was a bad leader. And Ray is not just a bad leader, you're a bad father. And the Mysterios have heard enough. They just sat here for like 5 minutes being on the bad end of a diss track. And finally, they attack. And Priest just yanks Balor to the floor to get him away. And we come back with the match. But what did you think here of Balor and Priest?
It was okay. Like, it was okay in that it was a WWE speak type of promo. You know, this, like, a couple weeks into this, like, Judgment Day thing now with the Finn Balor rebrand. I suppose you can say that it's an improvement over what they had with the Edge, where at least the promos aren't as
low-hanging fruit.
Or, like, somewhere, like, between sci-fi and, like, children's TV, you know? This at least, but you know, this as much, like, it's not that as bad, but it is, like, I found awfully generic. You know, the voices just feel very generic.
Becky Lynch. Oh, sorry. I skipped over the entire match. They come back. Balor is working on the back and then the knee of Ray after knocking him off balance off the top. Dominic's checking on Ray, comes back, and Ray hits a sliding sunset flip to the floor onto Balor. And Ray hits this top rope Hurricane Rana that looked awesome. Follows with a 619. Ray's limping to the top, misses the frog splash, tries for a crucifix, and then Balor takes control, drops him, and hits the coup de grace for the clean pinfall victory. And the way I kind of was imagining this goes is maybe Edge's return is the big anniversary with Ray, and that is where Edge and Ray get linked up. That's the go home show for SummerSlam, and you can save the announcement of, you know, Edge's involvement till, you know, a couple days before SummerSlam, but that would seem like an opportune time for Edge to appear. And maybe you do, obviously the X factor is Dominic and how he fits into this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would make sense. You know, they did bring Edge's name up in the attack this week, and they've been teasing Edge with all of his prior, I suppose, associates. but we haven't really had any hints towards Rey yet. So that could make sense. Sure. Yeah. Whatever.
Maybe Edge will come back with a turtleneck.
Ooh. All right.
Becky Lynch is out, and she says she was devastated after not winning Money in the Bank, and she lost her mind a bit. And compares Liv winning the cashing in to winning the lottery. But Becky doesn't need to win the lottery because I work my ass off each week for a paycheck. She doesn't want a handout to get this title. So she won her no holds barred match and should have been named the number one contender. But instead, Carmella is getting a rematch. So even she's poking the holes in this logic. She didn't get a rematch after WrestleMania when she lost the title and demands one for SummerSlam. So she is here ringside for Bianca Belair and Carmella, the rematch for the Raw Women's Championship after the controversial finish at Money in the Bank.
What was the controversial finish?
It was a clean KOD.
Like what the what?
It was like, it was as non-controversial as you could possibly present your challenger.
So how did they justify this? Are we getting automatic?
That was sort of the idea here was like, this is a bogus rematch that Becky had. Your heel Becky has made perfectly clear points that you should side with her over. And Carmella just got this rematch because
they don't even attempt to explain like the reason why she has a rematch here for the title.
None. I mean, that was kind of part of it here. It's like, why did she get a rematch? But Bianca just faces all challengers. She just looks at the whiteboard and sees, hey, this is who I'm facing tonight.
All right. Sure. Whatever.
Carmella drop kicks Becky, sending her into the buckle. And then a high cross attempt is caught by Bianca and turned into a deadlift vertical suplex. As Jimmy Smith says, 99 times out of 100, cross body off the top. Match is over. This is that one time way, that one time that high cross off the top, match continued.
Somebody must out there must have a high cross as a finisher.
Sure. Well, usually it's you create a wrestler and you just default finisher there.
Maybe he's been only watching wrestling from like, I don't know, the 1970s where like a move like this was incredibly rare and maybe justified as a finisher.
Belair lifts her up with the double underhooks, but Carmella rolls her up to counter, and then on the second try, drops Carmella. Belair stops a super kick and dumps her onto the buckle, is going for the KOD, and it's countered in midair into a facebuster for a near fall by Carmella. They went for more near falls, and I would say they mapped this match out to be more dramatic than the Money in the Bank match that I didn't sense much drama at all. The problem was, this was a crowd that was just as confused as you were as why Carmella had this match and were just very quiet, I would say, for most of it. They go to the floor and Carmella rakes the eyes of Belair. And then Belair, who's blinded by this, shoves Carmella into the post, but she's still trying to see. And she rolls Carmella into the ring, I guess out of instinct. And then Becky Lynch walks around the ring and Belair now can magically see Becky and is distracted by her. My vision's back, but now I'm in the fog of Becky Lynch and I just can't get back into the ring. So she's counted out. Yeah. Like, what was this?
Well, I think the idea was she was so confused by having her eyes attacked on the floor that she somehow managed to lose count. I mean, it was the combination of the eyes getting attacked and also Becky Lynch distracting. But Carmella really should have attacked her ears because surely she could still hear the count, right? You know, she should have really raked the ears or just, you know, like... Something.
Maybe that was a subtlety we didn't quite narrow in on.
Yeah, perhaps. Weak finish. You know, weak finish. I thought these two like were trying hard and did have like a pretty interesting, fun match laid out with a lot of interesting sequences.
I thought they had a lot more ideas than the pay per view match that just seemed to be just, you know, nothing. It was just such a flat match to me. I thought they had more here, and I guess obviously this is extending the program or else you would not be doing a finish like this. Although,
well, you know what they do, like they like to rematch the shit out of everything, you know, until just to kind of bridge us over until the real match at the pay-per-view. So we're going to get at least one more match between Bianca and Carmella. just so they can hold Becky off.
So throughout the weekend, they promoted Bobby Lashley holding an open challenge for the U.S. title and Riddle taking on Theory. And in the graphic, they just noted, it's Lashley and Riddle against Rollins and Theory.
Dude, like I was doing the Post Daily News update with Kate today, and they had Theory versus Rollins up there. By the time I was finished editing and uploading,
Theory and Rollins or Theory and Riddle?
Riddle and Theory.
Yes. Whatever.
Riddle and Theory was up there. And by the time I had hit upload and was about to close my browser, the thing was gone. Just vanished into thin air. So
that's where plans go.
Yeah, really. So, yeah. It's unpredictable. Unpredictable.
Completely unpredictable.
I don't know why they bother. Like, don't even preview the show. Just say, like, wrestling will occur.
Or put a question mark at the end of the announcement.
Yeah, yeah. They try their best. You know, I do feel bad for the people like who write these things on .com. Like, it's embarrassing for them. So.
Oh, I mean, it's listen, like, the writing staff, the people who have to promote this, it's just like, dude, it's out of their control. It's just, yeah. you get the word, hey, someone didn't like this, and instead we're going to do this instead. Oh, we promoted this for a week. Yeah, we're not doing it.
No, at this point, like,
are we going to explain it? No, we're just going
to
change it.
At this point, they should just preview it, like, you know, who's going to appear, like SNL, you know, when they say, like, oh, such and such is going to guest host, you're going to see this band. That's all you have to do. Just say, Brock Lesnar is going to be there, or,
Bobby Lashley in action.
Well, you don't know that. You can't even guarantee that. You might not have the match. So.
Action can be multiple things. I mean, he's going to physically move to the ring at some point.
Speaking is an action. Breathing is an action. Okay.
Lots of a wide range of descriptions that can be available to you. Edge vignette ran, and later in the show, they aired a more updated one that had, what did we see? Mick Foley's flannel. We saw John Cena, piece of merchandise.
Our RKO t-shirt.
Yes.
A chalice with blood in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, tying all this.
Maybe it's Gangrel. Oh. Who else could it be?
That links all those things together. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it'll be Jim Johnston.
Oh,
yes.
Jim Johnston walking out with these
coming back. New the themes fire. For everybody.
Okay, that's awesome.
Miz TV with guest Ciampa. Ciampa's mission on this brand, he wants the eyes of the world on him, and no one commands the people's attention more than the Miz. So I'm completely using you, dude, for attention on me. And Miz is he's down for this idea. He loves it.
I like that they, like, you know, they've had weeks now. One of my big complaints, I think, last week was the fact that, like, Ciampa's been helping the Miz out for weeks and weeks and weeks without any real explanation. We don't know why they're together. So they come up with an explanation here, and it's basically, oh, this guy's really famous, and I
want TV famous.
Time. Yeah. That's it. That's really the best that they could come up with. No, like, prior association or, like, I don't know, nothing deeper than that. Oh, this guy's on TV, and I need to be on TV too.
I used to watch Real World, and one Mike Mizanin really jumped out of the screen at me. And ever since, I realized that to succeed in my real world, I needed a role model like Mike Mizanin. So Miz explains that he's also guided the social media icon Logan Paul. And that's the type of thing Ciampa wants. So Ciampa's aspiring for the attention that Miz receives and the influence of Logan Paul.
Ciampa wants to be the next Logan Paul. Clearly, he wants to be a Paul brother, you know, go like get a YouTube channel. I don't know, celebrity boxing, getting a number of controversies and,
have an entire country that wants absolutely nothing to do with you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Paul has a response. He doesn't want to be the Miz's partner, and he's coming for the Miz at SummerSlam. And Miz knows Logan is just drumming up publicity, and he gives him one last chance to retract his statement, take my offer, and we'll become the tag champions. Or I'm going to find someone else. So Miz clearly not keeping up with anything going on with the tag title picture, and that a match has been signed for SummerSlam. So I don't know what Miz is pitching here at this point. I guess he's just looking for maybe at a house show we'll pick up these tag titles. AJ comes out and points out how Miz has to get others to fight his battles because you're not brave. And he goes on to say, it's the actions of a man who is a coward with tiny, tiny balls. And I was hoping that this crowd would just be as muted as they had been most of tonight. But then a tiny balls chant erupts. And it was at that moment it all made sense to me why WWE Shop has created a new Miz shirt that has the hello name tag that reads, hello, I have massive, massive balls. And knowing that, yes, there are humans that will buy this shirt and there are humans that will wear this shirt where other humans will look and see that you are wearing and have purchased this shirt about having massive balls.
Right. Yeah. I don't doubt like you remember the It store, you know, a Hot Topic, I suppose, you know, for our American friends, like joke shirts are a thing. You can at least, you know, be guaranteed to, you know, like sell at least 5 or 10 copies of something like this as a gift. I mean, I would think that these would be more gifts, you know, than actual people buying for themselves, I think.
What's your reaction if someone got you this as a gift? To me, it's like the gag gift. Once the gag gift is like over $5, it's like, all right, this is.
I could have really used this $30 for something else.
It's like, know? This is a complete, utter waste of money and my time.
I wouldn't be rude. I mean, I would laugh. I think I would give you the intended response of the gift. It'd be a nice moment for everybody at the party.
I would feel too obligated. I would just be, you know what? You missed on this one. This is a poor gift.
The next time somebody gets you like a joke t-shirt, because somebody will in your lifetime, I'm sure. Maybe somebody will buy you this very shirt, you know, at the end of the year, John. I want you to just yell at this person, just like chastise this person for a terrible waste of resources in this, you know, very difficult economy.
Yeah. I'll stare them right in the face and I'll just ask them, are you aware how many children are starving?
What do you mean? You can buy a tank, or you can buy a quarter tank of gas with the price of that shirt.
Yeah. The world's problems. And you spent $30 on this shirt. Ezekiel comes out. It's just a mishmash of just everyone in this segment. He introduces himself to AJ. They have not met. And Elias was a big fan of AJ. And he talked to Adam Pearce about making this a tag match instead of a handicap match. AJ agrees to team with him. And we get the Miz and Ciampa against AJ Styles and Ezekiel.
Miz and Ciampa against AJ and Ezekiel. Yeah. Yeah, man. Ezekiel is just, I feel like just kind of floating from like, you know, thing to thing and still waiting for Kevin Owens to return.
Dude, I bet you he's texting Kevin Owens every day.
He's checking on him. Percentage wise, just tell me like,
you know, at the NHL draft, moving around pretty gingerly. Can you get on an airplane?
Yeah.
Pick you up? We'll drive cross country.
Do you want to at least like shoot a video on your cell phone that you can send to me that I can respond to perhaps?
I'll fly there, Kevin. You don't have to leave your house.
Yeah. He is floundering right now without KO.
This match to me was just, long. There was a long heat spot on Ezekiel, and this was not entertaining. Jimmy Smith remarks, look at this huge crowd we have. And it was a pretty sizable crowd. They had like over 7,500 people here, and they're all chanting for Zeke. Dude, you could not hear a peep from this crowd when he pointed this out. I was like, who is yelling Zeke? The voice in your ear right now that's telling you Zeke? That's the only person that was saying Zeke at this moment.
Maybe it was like the five people right behind Jimmy Smith that were standing right there. And so
they were yelling, geek, geek.
Okay. I doubt that. I don't think anybody would yell that.
AJ gets the tag and he hits a pump handle into a gut buster. Skull crushing finale gets counter with an Ushiguroshi. Ciampa is in to make the save. Then Ezekiel tosses Ciampa out. Styles rolls to the calf crusher in the corner. And Ciampa returns and attacks AJ, breaking the calf crusher. And the referee just calls for the bell. It's a DQ. Corey Graves can't understand this finish. He's like, this is ridiculous. He's the tag partner. And AJ lands a forearm to Ciampa on the floor as Miz hobbles up the ramp, leaving Ciampa. and ending this segment.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say. It was just, to me, it was a long amount of television time for nothing all that engaging.
So at this point, like with most WWE TV matches, I recognize like there's a certain standard of action that like I think is that you could at least say is decent. Okay. And I suppose that depends on like what you're comparing it to. Maybe I'm like in my, for me now, I'm comparing it to the history of professional wrestling, of all the wrestling that I've seen. The standard that we're at right now, I think, is at least better than the average that I've seen throughout my lifetime, which includes like generic, like TV wrestling from the 90s. This was better than that in ring, but it's just not memorable at all. And for no stakes, it's really just kind of action for the sake of action. And I think at this point, most people need a bit more than that, you know, to keep their attention. So, I don't know. Maybe some people are still enamored just by, like, imagine if, like, you know, we're watching F1, John, you and I, and they're racing for no reason. There's no points involved.
There's no points this week, guys.
Yeah.
They're like, just, they want to just, you know, once go a for month, a drive.
Like, once a month on a streaming service that you have to pay extra for, you get to watch the races that actually have points attached to them. The rest of the time, for 5 hours a week, you're just going to get races where they're going around in circles. You might not even necessarily get a finish line, okay? Sometimes it's just the track. They're just, like, going around in circles. And no strategy, like, nothing. It's just they're racing. And You might really, some of us might really like just, you know, oh, look at the engine. Look at the wheels go. This is really impressive. Look at how he's turning the corner. That's really impressive. But I would say the vast majority of people would not give a shit. And that's what you have most of the time when you're watching WWE TV. These matches are meaningless. And only if you really like the action, speaking of action, you know, just of like people doing moves, then you might be entertained.
Let me go a step further, and your hypothetical race, that means nothing. No points are at stake, but you still sit down and you watch it way. And on lap 58 of 65, someone runs out onto the track and they just wave it off. They're like, the race is over. Like, you're not even going to give me a winner for the pointless race. No, it's over. We'll do this again sometime. Okay, someone ran on. There's a DQ.
Hold on a second. Well, see, because that happens so rarely, it would be news. Like, it would actually be somewhat of a, you know, significant moment. But imagine if that happens, like, every other race. You know, like, you might watch a race and then somebody will just run out there. Oh, my God.
Dude, someone's going to win this race. I think so. Nope. They threw it out.
Or like Max Verstappen's theme song plays and like all of a sudden
everyone stops their car and they've just got to turn their head and be mesmerized by the sound of Max Verstappen's odd playlist on Spotify.
And then, it could be DQ.
These drivers are idiots. Why are they stopping? They were going at such a high rate of speed and now everyone has stopped.
So anyway, that was this match. And by the end of this, what we have to look forward to is AJ Styles versus The Miz, potentially at SummerSlam. So
it's not a combination. Well,
not at SummerSlam, I should say. Well, what is the match? It'll be Miz.
The match will be Miz and AJ in multiple combinations for another month plus. The match at SummerSlam is probably going to involve. I mean, they really seem to be pushing like Miz and Logan Paul. One-on-one. So I guess your only question is if they actually go through with that or they feel the need to have a Ciampa and AJ involved, which would improve that match.
So I guess it would probably be Ciampa and The Miz versus Logan Paul and AJ Styles. Is that it? Is that the team? If it's a tag team?
And maybe Ezekiel is, I don't know how the hell he fits into this. Maybe he's, maybe he can't tell Logan and Jake Paul apart, thinks they're twins.
Interesting. Maybe they're the same person.
None of that's interesting. Bobby Lashley is with Riddle as they prepare for their tag match tonight, which they only found out about a few hours ago because they were preparing for separate matches tonight. And Riddle wants to watch Stranger Things with Bobby, and he's scared about Vecna. and Riddle, who certainly would be a Dustin. I think people would make that comparison too.
Are you caught up?
I'm getting there. I'm on like episode 5. So in about 28 hours, I'll be caught up to all of the episodes. I mean, like I need to like set my alarm to find time in the day to watch these episodes. They are incredibly long, but it is very good. I can understand. Kate Bush, what a gift this franchise has been for her.
Sounds like it. Yeah, I've been hearing about people.
The cure really for Vecna. That's Max. Okay, different Max than Verstappen. Lashley's already watched Stranger Things, so he can't watch it with Riddle. Alexa Bliss and Asuka against Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop. I'm not going to make the same points again, but this was largely pointless. Graves explains that this just isn't the same Alexa Bliss as the Alexa pre-therapy. She left something on the couch. She's just not as aggressive anymore.
So I found that at least, pretty interesting, because this entire time that Alexa Bliss has come back on this run, like, her character has been incredibly flat. I can't tell you what the character is about, other than the fact that she claims she has no friends. She walks out with the doll, but I don't even have like a semblance of any sort of arc. So this, at least, like what Graves said here, at least told me that, okay, they're at least going to tell the story of her, like, not being who she used to be. She's going to, you know, get her groove back somehow. But then the match occurred. She wins.
She won clean. She hits the non-aggressive Alexa Bliss, who left something on the couch months ago, just DDTs Nikki, pins her, and then on top of it, she smiles and hugs Asuka, this friendless, non-aggressive, therapy-affected Alexa Bliss. And Graves' point was just pointless.
Right. So it's got to be Vince feeding him these lines, or like, I don't know, maybe it's in the rundown or something. But then, like, why was the match booked like this? Like, it feels like they were telling two different stories, you know, or one person was at least telling a story and the other person was not telling any sort of story whatsoever.
Maybe they're not sure and they want to keep their options open.
God, maybe. I don't know. But it just seems like they're very clueless about what to do with Alexa Bliss at the moment. And it's a real shame because, you know, she's one of the few stars that they have in the division. And it's just week after week now, it's there's just nothing to latch onto.
What an underlying story about how therapy's taking the edge off of Alexa Bliss.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't go to therapy.
Watch out, folks. Therapy, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Bottle your feelings inside because it could really do a number on your career. Great. The Usos, they show the highlight of them retaining over the Street Profits at Money in the Bank with Ford's shoulder off the mat. So the Usos come out. They run Raw. They run SmackDown. The Profits are just whining and crying. The Profits come out. And then R-Truth shows up in the city of brotherly love, San Antonio. And he goes over all the different fields he has certifications in, including as a referee, and reveals a referee shirt. And he wants to audition to be the referee at SummerSlam. Dude, this guy was pretty entertaining, I thought, here, doing all the referee mannerisms. And just, it was completely ludicrous. But at this point in the show, I just wanted something, anything. And this crowd was like, this guy's funny. And Jimmy calls him a clown ass. And Truth gets serious and says, you want to fight this clown ass? And he challenges both Usos with my partners he has in the background with the Street Profits. And then Omos enters with MVP. Dude, this felt like the most like Mystery Vortex edition of Raw I've watched. Like, this feels like a show that was just torn up this afternoon and they just put the pieces back together. And we had to come up with ridiculous explanations for these people being aligned. And to MVP's credit, he explains, we were watching R-Truth on the monitor and decided to come out. And Omos wants to be the special referee at SummerSlam. Why? Why he's shooting for the stars of, can I be the referee at... Could you imagine this guy with all those near falls we saw at the last pay-per-view and this guy going up and down, counting three? Could you imagine this guy refereeing a match at any high intensity?
You know, he would die. There's a bit of a curiosity for me to see it.
Well... Yeah. He wants to pair up with the Bloodline tonight, and then they attack the Profits and Truth, and we come back with a match. Now, I want to tell you, because I didn't know if this could be done on time. there were 20 minutes left in Raw, and I was 40 minutes behind. It was the first time I was looking. I was like, I might not finish this on time. I finished with time to spare.
Yeah. No problems whatsoever.
It was fine. So we have this six-man tag, huge stakes. The Profits go for these pescados to the floor. Dawkins just like sails past Jay. It looked like he just crashed onto the floor. He just like leaped into the air and plop, goes right to the floor. They get the heat on Truth. Ford comes in, leaping blockbuster, but the Topikon Hero gets stopped by Omos. Profits and ram Omos into the post. Ford lifts up Jimmy on his shoulders, and Dawkins goes for a spinning elbow off the top. Truth comes in for the five-knuckle shuffle, which Omos stops again. And then after disposing of Truth, Omos gets into the ring, lifts up Angelo Dawkins for the tree slam, and Omos, who's hoping to be the referee, pins the guy who is going for the tag titles in 3 weeks. And that was that. This was where we got a finish. Thank you.
Yes, well, come on. You can't have a non-finish with Omos in there. So, I mean, Dawkins, I suppose, he can lose as many times as he wants.
Sure.
He's still going to be a contender.
Couldn't pin Truth. Truth is, you know, off limits.
Yeah, that's right. Well, maybe that's the big program that Omos has,
R-Truth. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't have that much to say about the match. You know, it was just a match. I don't really have much of a sense of the direction that they're going to with Omos other than, it's another iteration of Profits versus the Usos. So we're going to get three more weeks of this until we get the rematch.
I think people are interested in the rematch after Money in the Bank.
Interested in the rematch. I'm not at all interested in the TV where we're going to get these mindless, repetitive combinations of these teams over and over again. I've had it now for like three months, it feels like.
Kevin Patrick speaks with Seth Rollins. Rollins starts talking about Ezekiel. I don't know what Ezekiel had to do with any of this. And jokes about him being Ezekiel, Elias, or El Gigante. And then segues over to Riddle, who is actually involved in the match tonight, asking if he's a savant thinking on a higher plane or just an idiot bro that Randy felt sorry for. Riddle is riding on the can't ride on the coattails of Orton anymore. And if you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. Just ask Cody Rhodes. And Theory walks in and asks for advice from Seth about cashing in. And Rollins says he's come to the right person. Come with me. And they leave.
That, you know, playing with fire and getting burnt line is really interesting. Because, of course, Cody Rhodes played with fire and got burnt.
Very literally. Yes.
Yes, he did. In a different company.
That's right. Logan Paul has a response for The Miz that he filmed during Raw. You are delusional, and they are done. He wants him one-on-one at SummerSlam, and I'll be there next week on Raw, and that's going to be awesome.
You know, I'm sure they're thinking right now about how to craft that segment to ensure that Logan Paul gets a positive reaction. Thus far, we've only seen him in these videos. So we don't exactly know how these crowds are going to respond to him, but I have to imagine that they'll be trying really hard to frame the segment to get him to be cheered. So we'll see.
And a lot invested in Logan Paul. This is not just a one-off for WrestleMania. I mean, they have a long-term plan with Logan Paul, and they're in Tampa next week. And yeah, we will see what the, I think that segment takes a lot of like careful crafting that they get the desired response for Logan Paul. And then the main event, Bobby Lashley and Riddle against Seth Rollins and Theory. To set up the commercial break, Dolph Ziggler's music plays and he comes out and just sits ringside as we go to break with the hook of, why is Dolph here? And I think people were asking that question. I don't know if there was a great anticipation for the answer. It's just a question that went through their head.
Yeah, I mean, every time Dolph Ziggler comes out, he's got like a different character and different identity. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like this would have been a great hook for like main event or for NXT. I found it interesting. Yeah, on Raw, I'm not sure.
Rollins hits an inverted superplex onto Riddle, and then Theory does a roll into the ring, into a neckbreaker on Riddle as Corey Graves compares Theory to a bird of prey like an osprey. And then Lashley comes with Rollins and gets him on his shoulders, going for the Stormbreaker, also like an Osprey. And Theory makes the save. There's a rolling elbow by Rollins. And then he lands the frog splash on Lashley for a two count. Riddle is tagged in, does his Randy spots to Theory, and goes for the RKO. But Rollins pulls Theory to the floor. Lashley then spears Rollins through the barricade. And then an A-Town down and RKO get countered. Theory uses the rope for leverage on Riddle when Ziggler gets up and knocks Theory's legs off the rope. And Theory looks around. He's stunned at Ziggler. And this leaves him open for an RKO, and Riddle pins Theory. And the show goes off the air with Ziggler entering the ring, super kicking Theory, and Dolph's music plays, leading to the most unlikely extra to the show as Corey Graves signs off stating, "Dolph Ziggler is back with authority." Didn't think Raw was going to end that way.
No, I didn't think so either. No. Adrian in the chat brings up how didn't Ziggler and Rude attack Omos at MVP? Why was there no follow-up? It's a very interesting question. I mean,
no, it's not. Why was there no follow-up? I am stunned. Yeah. I am stunned by that.
So, yeah, a direction I did not expect, you know, to pick all people. They chose Dolph Ziggler to presumably take John Cena's place at SummerSlam for Austin Theory. Is this what's going on?
No, Theory's facing Lashley.
Oh, okay. Never mind. So this is just the bridging program.
Yeah. I don't know where Dolph Ziggler fits into all of this, but obviously he's attached somewhere in all of this.
He's facing
Lashley and Theory are doing the rematch for the United States title.
Wow. I must have forgotten. Mm-hmm. So that's a rematch too.
Yes.
God. Wow. Okay.
Dude, this Raw was just the main event was actually a good match.
But who cares? There's like a million good matches. Like, give me like what's it for?
To find out what Dolph was here for.
Are you would you honestly like take the time out of your schedule to watch this match because it was a good match?
The main event. If I was sitting down and someone said, "Hey, the best match on the show was the main event. I would probably check out the main event on the show, maybe.
Yeah, I guess I guess I'm beyond that. You know, like there needs to be another reason to hook me, you know? Like if it was even if it had a significant story attached to like, or if it was a first time pairing, perhaps, like just something that was a bit unique that answered some sort of curiosity. I didn't think this tag match had like what was this answering? Who's going to interrupt it by the end?
If I missed Raw and I said, "Wait, what happened on Raw?" What would you tell me? Like, be honest. Like, what was significant that is worth, that comes to mind for you to catch me up on what I missed?
Well, okay, fine. Dolph Ziggler attacked Theory at the end. I think presumably turned babyface. Let me see here.
Brock Lesnar showed up. That was something.
That's not significant at all. What did he accomplish? What? Just the fact that he showed up and talked about hogs? What was accomplished from his appearance? What changed the story from his appearance today?
There's a way to beat Roman Reigns. It involves his heart being ripped out through his ass.
So sure, okay. If you really want to hear that line, yeah, maybe that might be a reason. But you did not need this. Like in the Wikipedia article for this feud, if there even is one, tonight will not be mentioned. Like in the A&E Rivals episode chronicling Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns for SummerSlam 2022, this will not be a part of that segment or that documentary. Okay. What else did we have here? Let me see. What changed the course of any storyline?
We had Becky challenge for a title match or request a title match at SummerSlam. It was not answered, but she threw it out there.
Requested a title match. Okay. Did she not do that prior? No. Like she's talked about wanting to be back in the title picture.
Now she has a date in mind.
Okay, fine. Significant. Wow. You know, there's continued teasing, like Dominic, they're continuing to tease Dominic potentially joining the Judgment Day.
Yeah. I think that was honestly one of the better things on the show. Not so much like the Dominic stuff, but that match with Rey and Finn Balor, I thought was very good.
again, it's like, yeah, sure. Like, if you're in it to just watch good action.
I like where that story's going, though. I think Edge gets attached to that. I think, like, the Dominic stuff.
What do you like about the story itself, other than the concept? Because that thus far, that's all I'm seeing, the concept of Dominic potentially joining Judgment Day. But what exactly, like, are we seeing in these scenes that actually is making it good?
I thought there was nothing wrong with the promo that Finn Balor.
There was nothing wrong, but what was?
Are you interested in where the story's going? I would say yes.
I am interested too. I'm interested in the concept, but I would say there's hardly like any sort of like interesting tease about it that's making me that sucked in, you know. Anyway, fine. Okay, what else? What else was significant on this show?
That's about it.
Carmella beat Bianca Belair, I suppose, via countout. So they're going to get another rematch on TV.
That's not significant.
Okay. You know, the Edge video teased a few more names, like, or at least like they made the Edge's videos made reference to like John Cena and Randy Orton and Mick Foley,
who just noted that he did sign a new Legends deal with the company, and that's why his merch is going off of a pro wrestling tease.
Oh, okay, yeah. Everything else was just like really kind of carrying shit along that's already been established, you know,
which is a lot for 3 hours carrying shit along. what a description of Raw.
Honestly, one of the more interesting things that would have come out of this is if they were this tease of Alexa possibly losing her aggression and like trying to find it. Yet the answer, like, you know, whatever,
she found it. She lost it at the 2 minute mark. She found it at the 4.
Yeah. And that was it, man. Like, these are your 3 hours. And you know what? When we look at the ratings on Tuesday, it's probably going to be number one again. If not number one, then number two in the ratings. And that tells them that they have absolutely no need to change these shows. People are going to watch just because it's there.
Yeah, especially this time of the year. Next week, they are against the Home Run Derby. So that is something sizable. They will not be winning the night next week. But, yeah, I mean, largely for the summer, this will be the case where they are going to dominate on Monday nights. And we'll see if Logan Paul means anything next week, if that's a kind of crossover that means a whole lot, because they believe it will be and have, you know, gone after Logan Paul for that very reason. I thought this was also like a pretty subdued crowd as well. And I can't say I quite blame them, but I thought it was pretty lifeless at times on this show that takes a kind of match that with very little meaning attached to it and drags it down further when you can see the audience is not even engaged to lift things up a bit higher. So I thought that was a detriment on the show as well. Feedback time. We have
I'm sorry.
The grand thoughts from Tenise. Man, was this a chore to get through. Nothing of significance happened, with R-Truth being the only entertaining thing on the show. Boy, are they wasting away the good years Ray has left. An all-time great, given nothing to do. Not the role I'd have for him, but at least they found something for Ciampa to do. They have to do better. Take care, guys. I thought of the same thing, and I've thought about it many times with Rey Mysterio in this alternate universe where he does All In, and then he does not go back to WWE afterward. If he is with AEW, I believe that this guy is probably having one of the great runs of his career over these last few years, where he's working in front of gigantic, energized crowds, where he is going to be treated in kind of that legend spotlight at that point, and working with, just imagine the matches he would be doing. Hopefully, like, there is the concern that he's had so many knee problems that I think it would have been more taxing on him. But at the same time, this is a guy who swears on this stem cell treatment. He's not wearing knee braces anymore.
The other thing, he would be working with Dominic. Okay. And I'm sure Dominic, no matter where he would have gone, would have been a part of the package for this stage of his career. And I don't doubt if even, you know, he made himself available in AEW, Dominic would have probably come along with him and probably would have received at least, you know, a similar style of push, being paired with his dad in tag team matches.
Doing the occasional tag with his dad, or even being relegated to Dark and Elevation and being able to go to indies, I think would be very helpful for Dominic to have that option that he could go and do indies. I think he would be, that would have been of great value to him at this stage of his career.
Now, you know, but hindsight is 20/20, of course. And was he somebody who lost his eye, actually? Did Ray lose his eye? Was he one of the wrestlers?
Yeah, but he grew it back.
Oh, yeah, okay. Anyway, but, you know, there was no AEW at the time. And I think going to the most lucrative option really was going back to the WWE. And if it presented an opportunity to expose his son to a wider audience through the WWE on a big scale, which they have, a lot of more people know who Dominic Mysterio is. We see him almost every single week. I think that was justifiable. Like, he's clearly doing.
I understand like the reasoning for it. I think it's a more interesting question if Dominic was not in the equation and what's Ray looking for. Like, I think he very much did want to do New Japan at that point. And I just look at AEW that he would have been like, I truly believe like he would be protected as like this all time great.
John, he'd be a headliner, like in that opening crop of guys, like in that inaugural roster, like he'd be at the very top with the Chris Jericho, you know, like he'd be the guy headlining your pay-per-views, potentially becoming your first champion.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, he made this decision and very well, I completely understand going this direction too with mm-hmm. WWE. But I mean, it is a realization that he is, you know, he's in his spot in WWE. It's not a great spot. It's not the worst spot, but it's sort of just in the middle and not a priority, I would say.
No, not at all. And again, I do get the sense like right now at this point of his career, his priority is his son, making sure that his son is being set up, using his star power to help his son. And at the time, or maybe currently, he thinks the best way to do that is to be associated with the WWE. You know, the better question is when the contract comes due, when his and Dominic's contracts come due. Does he think that there's a better opportunity for him elsewhere? Or do they, you know, do they think that, oh, okay, we're in the system right now, let's just stay here?
Well, I mean, the fact is he's 47. He'll be 48 by the end of this year. I mean, Dominic will not always have Ray. And this angle may, in fact, be expediting that in terms of getting Dominic away from Ray. And that becomes your test of where Dominic fits and being in a position without the Ray attachment. Like, where do you see Dominic? What kind of role do you see him having on his own? I think that's tough. And that's when you look at, okay, you've been on television for 2 years, and are you at the level where you can hang without the Ray attachment?
The fact that they've yet to break him off, well, maybe it could suggest a number of things. Maybe it's at the request of Rey Mysterio. Who knows? But the fact that they've yet to like have any sort of storyline with Dominic outside of Rey Mysterio, and the fact that I haven't seen the type of charisma that I think is expected of a WWE performer of his age, nor does he have the look that I think they look for in people like an Austin Theory, for instance. I don't think there'd be any significant role for Dominic Mysterio without Rey.
Tough. And you've had a year now with fans back. That was the whole thing of the, like, that first year for him with, like, we don't have real crowds. Maybe there's some charisma that he attaches to. And like, I'm not trying to dog him either. I think for his experience level, I think he's done a very adequate job, but I think that's the big test is going to be away from Ray, and maybe he will surprise us. But if you're looking at that being a debate and that he can't, like, how do you assess these 2 years in terms of optimal improvement at a young part of your career? And where is it best to be learning a craft that you're still relatively a novice at?
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. I'd love to see him, you know, I'd love to see him down in NXT, to be quite honest with you. You don't develop that way. But, you know, I mean, there's something to be said about like national exposure and improving your star power being on national TV. And
there's going to be those comparisons with Samoan Johnson, who looks like primed to start on television relatively soon and has come up in that system and going that direct route as opposed to like, this is a pretty high pressure situation for Dominic, who is, you know, the son of a very, very big legend in the industry and starting on the main roster. Where I don't feel they feel they can go backward now.
Yeah. I like in some level, I do understand that. And if you're the child, like a second generation star, yeah. In some ways, you'd be foolish not to accept it. But there's something that feels really just disingenuous to me about like essentially kind of using these children as like bargaining chips to, I don't know, potentially get some sort of appearance from their parents, you know? like maybe they, you know, they might think that they're one step closer to getting The Rock on their TV if like they have the daughter on. But anyway,
will we get an angle where Joe Gacy kidnaps Dwayne Johnson on NXT over the next year?
Doubtful. Highly doubtful.
All right. Well, that will bring Rewind to Raw.
No, actually, I'm sorry. I almost missed this. We have a super chat here from Bob the Builder who sends $2. Thank you for the support, Bob. Who is the next AEW guy to go to WWE?
Who's it going to be, Way?
The next AEW guy to go to WWE. Let me think about this. Yeah. Let me think about this.
Way knows the answer to it.
I mean, you know, the big name on everybody's mind is MJF, but I don't think that's happening soon.
It can happen soon.
Yeah. I don't have a guess. I can't really see anybody.
That's what the question is. Make a pure guess. That's
okay, pure guess. All right. I'm going to say one of Bear Country. Okay. Bear Bronson.
I thought you'd go with Bear Boulder.
Sure.
What about all of Roughing It? Can we get Bear Country and the new vicious Viking Raiders?
Ooh, okay. They'd have to be something else. We have to come up with different adjectives. I don't know if they'd take Leon Ruff back at this point.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show. We are back on Tuesday. Rewind away for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. Drive to Survive. The first three episodes. If you have no idea, if you just groan when we talk about F1, you can jump on board on Tuesday as we will give you we'll start right from the beginning. We will explain who these drivers are, what the hell was going on in season 1, why were there only certain drivers that you just had to squint and see them in the background because they would not even participate on the, what's this rinky dink Drive to Survive show? What, you think I'm gonna die driving? Drive to Survive?
What's this ever gonna do with our sport?
You can find out who were the real ones, season 1, who were on board immediately, and then the hangers on who jumped onto this thing season 2 once it was a proven hit.
Oh, there you go. The bandwagoners, the Drive to Survive bandwagoners.
I love Toto Wolf, but you know what? Hey, guy wasn't, we'll see when you get a sit down with me. We're going to meet all of them, Way. Lawrence Stroll down memory lane back to his days with Williams.
Maybe a bit of Roman Grosjean. People who aren't even, you know, part of the current seasons that are fan favorites.
His heart will grow, John. We will meet Daniel Ricciardo, Carlos Sainz, all of them. Yes.
It's been a while. I mean, I feel at this point, I feel like I've lived through like 4 different years of iterations of these people on different teams.
So. It is a bit of your head spins a bit when you're going back 4 years and the different teams that everyone was attached to, like, what a different world where Daniel Ricciardo is, you know, your number one driver for Red Bull.
Totally, yeah. I mean, you know, we're going to take it from a pretty novice's, real novice perspective.
Expert still. Analysis. I'm going to be analyzing like the gas choices of each vehicle.
Oh, the gas choices. I don't know if they have gas choices. I think they can only choose one. but that's interesting. Okay, you don't think
they get options?
Yeah, I don't know if they get to like shop around to see who has the cheapest gas, you know, locally before they buy their gas. At least I don't think so. But you know, maybe we'll use this as a bit of like a way to like introduce people to even the idea of F1 and how it works. Cause I think just the structure of the whole league is very, fascinating.
Yes. I'm looking forward to this. It should be a fun review. So that's Tuesday. And then again, the G1 podcast begin this Saturday, postwrestlingcafe.com. Jump on board. You will get 7 G1 shows this month alone. What's
I'm just picturing like, I'm picturing like Lewis Hamilton driving around checking, like comparing gas prices. He's like, yeah, Shell, you know, it's 187. I think I can go 1877 down the street. So he's like going that extra block to go to Petro Canada.
Well, maybe, there might be some teams that they are, you know, they're pinching pennies. Maybe. All right. That is it for us. Thank you for tuning into Rewind to Raw, and we will chat with you on Tuesday.